Hello, 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 mamas, and welcome to another episode of Angel Moms Hopes of Heaven, Alana's Song. I am here with a special guest, Rachel Carlisle. I'm so excited to have her on the show. She is here to help us heal, to tell us her story, her journey about her beautiful daughter, Mariah. And I have just been anticipating this podcast all week because I'm thinking, if not the first, it's like the second of the mental awareness that you wanna give to us moms. So I am just excited to have you here. So I'm not gonna hold up the show. We're gonna get this going, and we're gonna dig right in. Welcome, Rachel. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Yeah. However you want to get started is fine with us. If you want to start with Mariah, your beautiful baby, if you want to start with where you're walking now, we as moms love to hear about other babies. You know,
yes.
You know, I yes. love to talk about my Alana.
I understand, yes. Completely understand.
So give us some love about Mariah.
Okay. Well, Mariah was born March 7th of 1993. She was my second daughter. Mm-hmm. I have four children altogether. So she was my second born, mm-hmm. two girls, two boys. So she completed my girl pack. She, you know, that was my hardest labor because mm-hmm. I had my children back to back. Okay. I was a young teen mom. I had both of my daughters I was 17 years old. Mm-hmm. So that was about the hardest thing that Mariah actually gave me was my labor. Mm-hmm. Other than that, she was a very quiet baby. She loved to sleep, and I would have to wake her up to feed her. She was my late talker, but that was probably because her older sister talked for her, made all her decisions. And Mariah was like really just laid back, you know, as a baby, as a toddler, she was fine with it. She was fine with her big sister, you know, saying, no, this is the doll she wants. And this is her favorite color, like all mm-hmm. of it. And Mariah she would just smile. And that was who Mariah was growing up throughout her whole childhood. She just was my easy, happy little girl. She was not athletic at all. She would trip all the time. And we would always joke that we could be in an open field. Uh-huh. And Mariah would fall down probably like every few feet, she would just tumble. Yeah. She was very yeah. accident prone all the time.
Yes.
So we would always tease her and stuff, and she always just took it like with a grain of salt. She was just amazing. And then came her junior high years, and she found her voice. It probably had to be about in seventh grade, and it was like boom, all of a sudden she was very outspoken, and she just was telling us, like, you know, what she liked, what she didn't like, which some of the stuff was like, wait, what do you mean you didn't like yeah. like you don't like that color, and, you know, yeah. she'd be like, no, I hated that color. And for some reason her sister always would pick like blue, and so uh-huh. So she had found her voice. And she started really wanting to just join more things and mm-hmm. be a little bit more adventurous. And that is when I found out for her love of art. She loved art. She loved expressing herself. She loved to dance. She was an amazing dancer. She could choreograph everything. She made the dance drill team in seventh grade. And then came high school years. She had so many friends, different friend groups. It wasn't just, you know, as you know, in high school and, yeah. you know, in school period, right? There's like the preppies and, you know, there's, you know, all the band, like, but she yeah. just was friends with every group. It did not matter. Wow. And that is where her art really expanded. And the things that she was painting and creating, she was extremely talented. She actually got, my mind went blank and I apologize. That's that okay. grief brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
She got accepted into the Chicago Art Academy.
Yeah.
So she was very, very talented. She also started cross country. She started softball. And again, let's go back to, she was not athletic at all,
wow.
but she gave it her all. She did not quit. She followed it through. She loved it. She loved just being surrounded with her friends, and she wanted to try, you know, just different things. And sadly, she did not go into going into college. She always wanted to be a mom, and she ended up falling in love, mm-hmm. and she found someone, and then she kind of followed in my footsteps as far as having baby, and then another baby, and then mm-hmm. another baby. Mm-hmm. She was an amazing mother to three beautiful children.
Yes.
And that was who Mariah was. Mariah just had so much love to give. And one day I remember her telling me I couldn't wait to be a mom. And I just, because I just, I want to, I just, I want to do all the things, all the crafts, all the, all of that, you know? And wow. so, which was kind of news to me because I really didn't think she, you know, I thought she was going to just do something totally different, but mm-hmm. she just was really, she was just a very happy, beautiful person inside and out.
Yeah.
Even through adulthood, it continued with her giving heart.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter if she didn't have anything, whatever she had, she would give to anybody. I mean, she may not have, you know, but just her gas tank could have been on empty. Okay. Yeah. And if she saw somebody, you know, she'd be like, come on, hop in my car. I'm going to give you a ride, you know, after work,
yeah.
because they would start walking or something. And they would try to give her, you know, money, because they could clearly see, you know, that little sign was on empty.
Right.
And she'd be like, no, you're taking away my blessing, you know, just, you know, so that's who Mariah was. That's who Mariah was.
Wow.
Sadly, I did not realize that she was living with a secret mm-hmm. That she had went through. And I remember her kind of changing a little bit, and she started kind of just, there was a short time where she was very quiet, very sad, very depressed. And later I found out it was because she had been sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
And now looking back, I can remember that evening. And, you know, I didn't know. I saw the signs now looking back.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. all the signs were there. And, but then she bounced back, and then she was Mariah again, you know, back to being, you know, the bubbly person. And her friend group did change quite drastically, but I thought it was just a phase, uh-huh. you know, just a phase. And yeah. so she didn't tell me that until after she had her third child.
Mm-hmm.
And, so there was a lot of things that she went through in her teen years, and then through adulthood she was living with another secret, and that was she was being mentally and verbally abused each and every day.
Mm.
And despite all of what she was going through, she still, you know, was really good about hiding, you know, how hurt she was inside. And she just always loved everyone and gave everyone her absolute, what she wanted for herself and yeah. for what others she'd want, you know?
Yeah.
That's how she lived her life, to treat other people how she would want to be treated, right? So when came the winter of 2020, you know, that awful year for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. I started noticing a little bit of a change in my daughter. I started noticing that our group chats, I grew up with my children. You know, I grew up with them. Yeah. And so we're very close, and we do group chats and all of that. And I noticed that there was always silence coming from Mariah, you know, and we would, you know, hey, Mariah, you know, hey, you know, and we would just get denied all the time. And so I was getting more phone calls of the worry, the franticness, the stresses, because things were shutting down. She was a server and bartender, and she was the sole provider for her children. Mm-hmm. So her stresses were becoming really great, right? With wondering how was she going to provide for her babies. Mm-hmm. And little did I, you know, I had no idea that she was starting to self-medicate herself with prescription pills. She had been diagnosed with having depression and anxiety a few years prior. And so she was seeing a doctor and she was getting those prescriptions. But what I did not realize was the fact that my daughter no longer qualified for insurance. She made too much money. And even as a server, she made too much money. So she had no way of getting her pills. And so she was just, you know, buying her scripts from people, friends, coworkers. And I did not realize that part until later. And I did not realize that she was self-medicating herself to numb her pain.
Yeah.
To numb her pain of, so she wouldn't have to feel the sadness, the worry. And that's when that dreadful call came in on May 14th of 2020. And I remember getting that call and I could not understand what was happening.
Yeah.
It made no sense.
Yeah.
I, you know, in the movies you see, you know, that scream that, you know, you fall to the ground. I remember when I got that call, I didn't laugh. I just was like, yeah, okay. Now, I don't know what joke you're playing, you know, because I had just talked to her a couple hours previously. And I'm like, I don't know what joke this is. I hung up the phone.
Yes.
And then I started frantically trying to get a hold of her. No answer. I started Facebook messaging her. There was nothing responding back. I tried to FaceTime her, nothing. And so I remember calling 911 and saying, did you guys get any calls coming in? Because I had got a message from my daughter at 2:22 in the morning. It didn't make much sense, but now I understand why. But I thought, okay, but she messaged me. So this is a really awful joke. And something just kind of told me, remember when you woke up at 2:45, Rachel, and you looked at the clock? Because I had been awoke to an ugly feeling inside of me. It was very ugly. And I think you can understand what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember looking at my phone to see the time. And I just said, in Jesus' name. And I plead the blood of Jesus upon whatever it may be. I rebuke that feeling.
Yes.
And then I tossed and turned, but I had this ugly heaviness in the pit of my stomach. I fell back asleep. And that's around 4 something. I got the phone call. It was about an hour later that I got a phone call from our Lake County coroner. And I thought, oh my gosh. And he said, I need to come by. Are you Mariah's mother? And I said, yes. And he said, I need to come by so you can identify some things. And I said, okay. And he came to my home and I identified things. And I just sat in silence. I was so numb. I look back now and I think, where is that blood curling scream that I've seen in the movies? Mm-hmm. Why did I just sit there numb? And I remember my kids were there. I remember looking at them and I can remember their faces as they looked at me with such worry and with such pain. They lost, you know, of hearing the news of their sister.
Yes.
But the pain in their eyes of looking at me, their mother, they were worried about me.
Yes.
And as I sat there, I was looking at them like, what's it? It was numb. It was a fog. It was, you know, my boys had came very quickly when I called them. I mean, and they live about 20 minutes away and they seemed like they were here within 2 minutes. And yes. I remember dreading to call my daughter because my daughter and Mariah should have just been twins. It would have made it so much easier for me. And I remember calling her and she didn't answer. And then I called back and she picked up and she said, "Mom." And I said, "I have to talk to you." And she said, "Mom." And I said, "Your sister is gone." And I can remember that blood curling scream. And I could hear her. She dropped the phone and she ran around the house screaming as if her soul had left her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so she wasn't able to be here as quickly as my sons were, but I can remember that part of that day. I can remember where I was sitting. I can remember where the coroner was standing. I can remember my sons sitting exactly where they were at on the couch. And I can remember those words.
Yeah.
"I'm so sorry." And I remember sitting there thinking, what do I do now?
Yeah.
What do I do? And I remember looking at him and I said, I don't understand. How did she die? Like, it makes no sense to me.
Right.
And he just said, "I'm very sorry. It'll take, you know, 6 weeks or longer because of COVID." And I remember thinking to myself, my daughter is going to a place with strangers. And I thought, all these things are, you know, running through my head and everyone's like trying to talk to me. And all I kept thinking was, I need to get my daughter.
Yes.
I need my daughter. I don't want her. Like, somebody tell me what I have to do next because I don't want my daughter there. And then all of a sudden the franticness inside of me thinking, it's COVID. Oh my gosh. So does that mean I'm not going to be able to, like, what is going to happen? Like, it, you know, all those things. And I remember the calls just started coming in and me having to make those calls. Mm-hmm. And because with social media, as wonderful as it is, all it takes is one person to find out. And before you know it,
yeah,
you haven't even had a chance to tell your loved ones and they're having to read it. So I was very fortunate that I was able to go to that funeral home that day, and a wonderful man that was there that owns the funeral home, he looked at me and he said, "I'm going to get your baby. Okay, I'm going to get your baby." And I said, "Okay." And so they got my baby within the 24 hours. And I know that's silly to think of, right? That's like the things that I remember. Things I remember. I think I even still had on my pajamas. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember any of that. I know I didn't brush my hair. Yeah. I know I hadn't taken a shower the day before because we were all, you know, supposed to be, you know, you weren't supposed to go nowhere. You weren't supposed to do nothing. So, I mean, I can imagine. I remember my daughter later looking at me, "Mom, people are probably, go change and at least put your hair up, Mom. You know, you got it, Mom." And I looked at her and I said, "I don't care.
Don't care."
And I remember people telling me, "You got to eat." And I thought, and in those hours and days, I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to shower. I remember if I wasn't sitting, and when I was sitting, I was in a rocking motion, as if I was just holding my baby rocking. And if I was standing up, I was pacing the floor in the same spot.
Yeah.
The same spot, just pacing the floor. People came, and all I wanted to do was scream and say, get out. Get out. Leave me alone. Get out. I'm not hungry. Get out.
Yeah.
You know, I even wanted to tell my children, you know, which they ended up, you know, they had, you know, they said, okay, mom, we're going to go. And I remember once they left, I sat on my couch in the complete darkness and I looked at the clock. And I just looked at the clock until it struck that time. And then that's when that curling, ugly sounds came out of me, because I realized my daughter, where she was, I could not go and help her. I didn't know where she was. I didn't any of it. And I just fell to the ground screaming and noises and sounds that I never knew I had in me. I sounded like a wounded animal in agony. And then the days to follow, I knew that I had to put my baby to rest. I had to give her what I possibly could. And we ended up having, due to COVID, I couldn't decide who could come and who couldn't. I just didn't have the heart in me. And plus with my divorce, it was a very ugly divorce and all of that. And but this wonderful man, the funeral director, he said, I've got it solved. We're going to have an outdoor funeral. It's never been done, but we're going to do it. And I was like, oh my goodness, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, there ain't no restrictions for outdoors, so we're going to do this. And so we were able to give her a beautiful going away. Then after that, you know, the silence comes in, and all the questions of wondering what happened. I was getting absolutely nowhere with the police. I was getting nothing of any answers. So I went and I became an investigator. And I guess I had to go through my divorce to find out what it means to really investigate. And I did. I discovered what had happened to my daughter. And just really quickly, my daughter passed away from what she thought she was taking, a Xanax. And sadly, it was filled with illicit fentanyl. And that is what took my child. And so that's a whole nother fight that I now have. But during those next few months, I realized I was now traveling in a new world.
Yeah.
Down a new path that nobody had given me a book for. That nobody had warned me about. And I soon realized that people that I talked to every day, that I grew up with, suddenly were no longer in my life. Didn't hear from people. So I soon realized how lonely this new path becomes. You know, I soon realized what it means to go and, you know, pick up the little trinkets that I, you know, when I'd go to the dollar store before, I would be like, who buys that stuff? Like, who buys all these little me? I'm that person now. You know, I soon realized what it means to hoard every single piece item from my daughter. Whether it's a note, I don't care what kind of picture it is. I don't care if it's a pair of shoes. I don't care if it's one of her eyelashes, her little fake eyelashes that fell off. I don't care what it is. I have saved it. I mean, I soon realized what it meant. I had to have every piece of her, and I don't care what it means. You know, I soon realized what it means to have so many pictures in my home, but to realize that it's not enough pictures. I soon realized But those pictures start becoming outdated. I soon realized that I didn't take enough pictures, and I was angry with myself because, oh, erase that picture. I look too fat. I don't look good. Erase it, delete it. Don't you dare store it. And I was soon upset with myself.
Yeah.
Because I wish I can go back in time. I soon realized what it meant to just say my daughter's name and how bad and desperately I need other people to say her name.
Yeah.
To talk about her, to share a story, to share whatever picture, to share a memory.
Yeah.
But most importantly, to say her name. I soon realized that my biggest fear is that she'll be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
I soon realized the importance of going to the cemetery and changing out everything and cleaning, you know, getting cleaning supplies, getting that little basket. Because nobody tells you, you know, if, you know, you bury your child, the importance of getting little clippers, a little blower, a little cleaner, mm-hmm. like all the little things that you're going to need. I didn't realize, I had no idea that there's, you know, there's rules in cemeteries. I had no idea about that. I mean, I wish somebody would have told me, because that would have really, like, I would have went shopping. I would have, like, because, you know, that's where my daughter is. I want to be able to put whatever I want to put. You own it, but yet you don't own it.
Yep.
I wish that people would have told me, when you're divorced or what have you, if you don't sign that document, you have no rights to where your child is buried. So if you want to add a planter, if you want to add a little extra something, you have to get permission from who owns it. And that is awful. That is my child. I don't feel that we should have to ask, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was, you know, places that you can get your little water. Like, nobody tells you these things, right?
Right. Right.
And I soon realized that the holidays are no more. There's no more traditions. There's no more of the same things.
Yeah.
The family dynamic has changed. And yes, you know, life goes on, right? But our lives stopped. And after a while, yes, you can put on that brave smile, right? You put on that armor and you say, okay, but inside you've got this scream that just never stops. It is what I call the silent scream. And you realize that everyone is smiling and laughing, and inside you just want to say, do you all not, like, get it? How, why are we?
Yep.
You know, because nobody wants to bring up your child because, oh, it may, you know, no, it makes us, that's what we need. Mm-hmm. That's what we need. So that empty chair is always there. And the difficulty of wanting to just, for me, you know, I bought two of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that first year, I dreaded it with, I waited to the last minute, and I had went and I was like, oh yeah. And I grabbed instantly two things, and I was like, wait a minute. You know, it's the little things, you know?
Yeah. I know.
It's the little things. And it's just, these are some worn out shoes that someone just hands you, and you just have no choice but to have to wear them.
To wear them.
Yeah. And I know for me, I now look at nature so much differently. I'm not a nature person, but I have become one.
Mm-hmm.
I love sitting outside and listening to the birds. I love listening to the trees, the wind and the sun. And
mm-hmm.
the summertime, I always go outside and I always look up at the sky because I just feel like it's being painted, you know, just for us, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm always looking for signs. And, you know, it's just, it's really unfair. It's unfair And it's so sad and it's so lonely. And what has helped me is so many people tell me, stop, get over it, move on. I refused. I have chosen to grieve out loud. That's what I've chosen to do.
Yes.
And I started on my Facebook talking about all my feelings and talking about every emotion, whether people liked it or not. Some of my posts, oh my goodness, it's like a book. And then there's other ones that are shorter. And you can kind of see from the time that Mariah passed away to now, there has been growth. There has been change.
Yeah,
I have learned to smile again. I have learned that it's okay for me to laugh. You know, it's okay to do those things. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to miss my daughter. I'm always going to have that silent scream inside. But I've learned to give myself grace.
Yes.
So that's what I started doing. I just started talking about it. I started talking about it through my Facebook. And then I started doing it through my TikTok. I had joined TikTok just to kind of make some cute little, you know, videos. And then I started really thinking, well, I really want to spread awareness on obviously illicit fentanyl, but I also want to spread awareness about grief,
right?
About our mental health, about all the stigmas that come with that, because it's not fair. It's not fair that we have to be afraid to talk about how we feel. What does silence get us?
Yeah.
Silence gets us nothing.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, had somebody talked to me about, you know, these worn out shoes and, you know, yes, of course, I probably would have been like, okay, well, I'm never going to need any of that advice or whatever, but you never know. You never know. And also to try to have other people understand what I'm going through and the importance of that I need for you to talk about my child, that it's okay to talk about Mariah. It's okay to say her name. It's okay to post about her. It's okay to just, it's okay.
Yes.
It's okay to be sad. It's okay, you know, for a mama, you know, to spend a day in bed. It's okay. Don't let nobody tell you that you can't, that you've got to pull yourself together and you got to, you know, no, it's okay. So I started doing that. And I was not prepared, I will tell you, to see so many mamas that have suffered alone in silence. I had one mama that wrote to me and said, I have not been able to cry out loud for 20 years.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, my goodness, I couldn't imagine.
Right.
You know, and I look back, like my grandmother had lost two children and she never cried. She never, and I know she did behind closed doors. Right. I know she did, but you know, because that's the way it was supposed to always be. Right. And I thought, I'm not going to do that. I refuse to do it. I refuse to do it. My child needs to be remembered and it's up to me to let the whole world know her name, who she is, who she was, what she stood for, and most importantly, to see her face and to know her name, but also for her children, for her children to know who their mother was.
Yeah.
So that is what I have chosen to do, and that's what I will continue to do until the day I take my last breath. And I join my beautiful daughter. My children sometimes roll their eyes at me and say, okay, Mom, you know, you act like Mariah is your favorite. And I'm like, well, you know, there was this joke with my kids, you know, I always say, you're my favorite oldest. You're my favorite youngest, my baby boy, my favorite oldest baby boy, you know. And of course, now I'm like, well, I'm sorry. Yes, your sister is now technically my favorite, but favorite in my own special way.
Yeah.
So that's my story. That's my story.
Wow. A beautiful, beautiful story. As I sit and listen to you, so many similarities with Mariah and Alana. Alana was quiet and she was the quiet kid. She was the baby. So her sister kind of took charge. And, yeah. Until around that middle school, high school, she just flourished. So while just listening to you, I was like, wow. And then listening to you as far as your feelings and your, you know, walking through the process of losing Mariah, I was like, man, stamp. I just understood everything that you were speaking of, everything. Just for moms listening, what were the signs Mariah was giving off and you just kind of blew it off? Like, it'll be okay. She's just going through a thing. She's just an eye opener for other moms who, you know, can either see it in other, you know, if they have lost a child, but they can see it in a child that they still have, you know? So let us
when she had been sexually assaulted, I noticed that she completely isolated herself. She isolated. She did not want to go anywhere. She slept a lot. She was very sad, got a little agitated, but just was very much just isolated and didn't want to talk.
Okay.
Did not want to talk. And a lot of her demeanor, she started dressing. She always loved like bright colored clothes. Mm-hmm. And so then she started just changing to where it was very much more darker clothes, you know, and it was very much like completely clothed. Right. I mean, not that my daughter, you know, she just would wear, you know, she had like cute stuff, right? Little necklaces. So that's what she was going through at that time. Mm-hmm. And then as far as when she started self-medicating, Mariah, I would get phone calls all throughout the day. I mean, it would be, oh my gosh, mom, you know, what should I cook for dinner? Or, oh my gosh, mom, I just saw this bird. Or, oh my gosh, mom, let me tell you, know, it was constantly. So I started noticing, not only for myself, but for my other children. Again, those phone calls, there was silence. Yeah. And then if we were calling, it would just reject. Mm-hmm. When I started getting the phone calls, there was a lot of sadness. She would be crying all the time, very sad, very depressed. She felt that she wasn't good enough. She wasn't worth anything. She felt hopeless, you know, and I would have to talk her like, Mariah, you can do this. You've got this. Yeah. You come from a long line of strong women, you know, come on, you know, we're going to get through this. Yeah. You know, but that's what I would hear a lot. Mm. And when I was talking to her, and then there was a few times when I would see her a couple of times, like more in the morning, Mariah was always really sharp and just like, as far as, you know, her makeup skills were on point. I mean, in her hair, I mean, she was an amazing makeup artist and wonderful at doing hair. And I really wish that she would have went. I mean, people hired her to do their makeup for prom and weddings. So she would just be like really bad. You know, I was like, what's going on? Uh-huh. And she'd be real snippy, like really agitated, whether it was, you know, with me, with the kids. And Mariah was my one kid who never, ever, ever talked back to me.
Yeah.
Never even tried to push that envelope. You know, as teenagers, they try to push it a little bit. Mariah was my one kid. I can honestly say her and my baby boy, never did, never did, you know? So those were the things. But then when I would see her again, she'd be all on point. She would be, and I would be like, okay, I think, you know what? All out the window. Uh-huh. I'm like, she's fine. Everything's okay. She's just stressed out. So those were the signs that I seen.
Okay.
And those were my signs.
Do you think?
And the weight loss, I'm sorry. And the weight loss.
Weight
She
loss.
Lost a lot of weight. A lot of weight. And she was not eating.
Okay. Do you think the times that she was on point, she was able to get the drug compared to when she was off and snippy, whereas she didn't have the drugs?
I think so. I think she would take a pill, you know, and it would just kind of calm her, relax her, and okay, she's okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this matter, this happened within, I'm talking about in just a matter of a couple of months. I mean, it was that quickly. And the weight loss was very quick,
wow.
You know, and she had told me, well, no, it's just, I'm counting, you know, my calories and, you know, I'm working out. And now looking back, I'm like, she was working nearly 40 hours plus a week,
yeah.
Sometimes not even, you know, working doubles and sometimes not even getting, you know, a day off for 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how, you know, now looking back, I'm like, Rachel, you know, but I just, you know, I took her for her word because she just, you know, mom, it's okay. And I believed her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I believed her.
What advice would you give? What would you, because we're always looking back. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. Coulda, shoulda. We're always mm-hmm. looking back. Seeing those signs, if you could do it over, what would you have done to like intervene? No, we're doing this. No. You're going here, yeah. You know, what would you have done differently if you just, cause I know they're adults
yeah.
and you got to give them their space and they have their mm-hmm. own house now and their own family. But as a mom, you still want to kick in that door and,
oh,
and
yeah.
No, this is what's going
on. I, you know, all of this, I live with a lot of guilt. Mm-hmm. I have 14 years recovery.
Okay.
And so my children, when my baby or my kids were a little older, you know, I started getting into drugs.
Okay.
And it started with, you know, I was tired of fighting mm-hmm. it in our relationship with mm-hmm. my ex. And I thought, okay, well, maybe this will help it, right? Join it. And it was just for the weekend party. And then from there, it led to many, many, many years of addiction. So my children saw firsthand. They witnessed it firsthand. They witnessed so much ugly, and it affected their lives.
Right.
I ended up, by the grace of God, saying, me and my ex, we said, no, we're done. And we walked away. So now I got out all those years. And we got out right before illicit fentanyl was getting put into this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And here my daughter, within a matter of a couple months, and one pill took her. Looking back, I should have listened to my gut.
Mm.
I should have listened to my gut because I was one of those people, right?
Yeah.
And I believe in tough love. I don't. I believe in boundaries. Absolutely. I don't believe in tough love because I was at one time homeless yeah. with my children. We walked the streets. So when I say that my kids went through it, they went through it because yeah. of my selfishness. That night I had got a phone call. I had called her a lot to the story. And if you follow me, I'm sure you have seen some of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had, talked to her, and that night I had so many people in my ear that were kind of like, okay, Rachel, you need to start putting some boundaries, right? Practice mm-hmm. that tough love. And so I had told her, I said, Mariah, I am tired of these late night phone calls that you're not going home. I get it. I understand it, but I'm tired of it. I'm doing this no more.
Mm.
And I'm sick of it. And I said, we're going to discuss this tomorrow. And I hung up. That was my last conversation with my daughter. I wish I would have listened to my gut. Had I listened to my gut, I would have grabbed my daughter. I don't care what it would have taken. She would have moved in with me.
Yeah.
She would have moved in with me. And I would have done anything. I don't care if it was, say, watching her. Okay, you got to go to the store. Okay, I'm coming with you.
Yeah.
You got to do this? Okay. Yeah. We're going to talk about it. We're going to get through it. Not going to do this. And that's the guilt that I have to live with the rest of my life. And, but yes, to answer your question.
Yeah.
I don't believe in the tough love. I believe in, for me, because I was that person and there was nobody there for me. And I needed my mom during that time of my life.
Yeah.
And, then my children wouldn't have had to go through so much hurt. And I caused a lot of trauma on my children. And, but I would have got my daughter. I would have brought her to my home.
Yeah.
And we would have done it together. Because, which is what I would have done.
Yeah. Because that's what moms do.
Yes.
That's what moms do.
And I do understand. And I don't want to take away from the mamas who, you know, have to put some boundaries and things like that. I'm not here to cast any judgment on any mama or dad, you know, because I understand every circumstance is very different. Yes. I do understand that. And I don't want to, you know, say that's the only way.
Yeah.
I know, you know, I've met so many angel parents, man, they went through it with their children. I mean, so many years, you know, and they lost so much. They were robbed and every, you know, I don't want to take away from that. I'm just saying for me, because once your child is gone.
Yeah.
There's no, okay, well, let's go back and no, you know, let me try this now. And the guilt that you live with is a pain I don't wish on my worst enemy.
Yeah.
I don't. And that is so, so. For me, what I tell parents now is really, really think about if you have to put RIP in front of your child's name. And you look at that. And then you tell yourself, okay, this is, what do you think you need to do next?
Yeah.
If your child is still here.
That's good.
And they are struggling in addiction.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
just a touching story that you have. I usually have questions throughout, but I was just sitting here just soaking it in because your story is amazing about you and your Mariah. Yeah. Wonderful. And I'm sure you did a wonderful job. We beat ourselves up.
We do. Yeah.
But I'm sure your children know, and you know, they are thankful and grateful for the mama that they have now. You know.
Yes.
So
yes.
Wonderful job. Wonderful job. So before we wrap the interview up, let mamas know out there where you can be reached, where they can get in touch with you if they want. If they want to follow you, you know, where can we reach you, mama?
Well, my Facebook, I am Rachel Carlisle. on Facebook. And then my TikTok is just me, Rachel C. And I just speak from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I speak from the heart. I share about my Mariah.
Yes.
And then on my TikTok, I share about my advocacy. Mm-hmm. I share about mental health. I share about just a stigma that is associated with so many different traumas, right?
Right.
I also am a big supporter for Drug Induced Homicide Foundation. So I'm very involved with them, but I am very happy to, you're the first that I'm going to say this on. I have started a nonprofit, and I was actually, it's coming up on the 3-year mark of Mariah's Angelversary this Sunday, Mother's Day, and Mariah's Movement. And it is, that name was created, obviously in honor of my daughter.
Wow.
But also me moving forward in this walk. And it is to go, my hope is to go into the schools and for education.
Yeah.
Education on obviously our drugs, the traumas of mental health, suicide awareness, just the stigmas, period. So, yeah.
I love that. I love what you named your foundation and what it stands for. Also with you moving.
Yeah.
Wow. I really love that. Mariah.
Thank you. And it starts with our kids, you know, because I wish that maybe Mariah could have known that it was okay to come and talk about it. Right. How many other kids are out there?
Right.
And I did have an opportunity, and this is where I got my idea. I went and I spoke at a local high school, and I shared Mariah's story. That was the first time I spoke at a school. And it was at an art event. And I just looked around. And when I shared her story, I had children that came up to me afterwards. And I just sensed and I felt Mariah for the very first time next to me.
Wow.
Like next to me. And it was like I could hear her voice. This is where you need to be, Mama. This is where you need to be.
Yeah.
So I want kids to know it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to talk about it.
Good. That is so good. Good. We never want to walk in these shoes, drive this vehicle. But since we're forced into it, we have to.
Yes.
I'm an advocate for you're going to find the purpose. You're going to stumble into it. You're going to find the purpose in this walk of losing your baby.
Yeah.
So that's just my encouragement, because I speak to so many mamas out there who are just, I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You know, so just,
it's finding your purpose through your pain.
Yeah.
You know, for me, that's how I see it.
Yeah.
Finding your purpose through your pain.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. I have the question of the day before,
okay.
Before you go, I ask all my mamas, Rachel, what is your hopes of heaven?
My hopes for heaven. Well, I know one day I will be there, and I know my daughter is going to be waiting for me at those gates.
Yes.
And I can't wait to get the biggest, tightest hug. But in the meantime,
mm-hmm.
I envision heaven, that my daughter is surrounded by so many beautiful angels.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, and those are the things that I guess I look forward to going up there, mm-hmm. to meeting,
yeah.
not only my daughter, but your baby, all these babies, you know, like how beautiful of a place to have all of our angels
yeah.
up there.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think it's any coincidence, you know, we've all been brought together because of our angels.
Yeah.
And to know that they're all up there, like, there's my mama. Oh, there, yeah, yep. Yeah, they got to meet. They got to meet. They're going to, you know, and so that's my, in how I envision heaven, in my hopes for heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I know that sounds cliche, but that's what gets me through. That's what gets me through. Knowing that my girl is not alone. She's not alone. You know, just like I have been embraced, engulfed by all of you mamas.
Mm-hmm.
My girl has been embraced and engulfed with all the angels.
That's good. That's good. So, that's good. Rachel, I love your hopes of heaven.
I can't wait to get there one day.
Yeah. I'm always saying, one day down, another day closer.
Yeah.
You know, even though we're enjoying our other children and things that we have to do, but us as mamas, one day down, another day closer.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to meet you. Mm-hmm. And to talk about my Mariah.
Yes.
So thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Mama. Thank you so much for joining us, giving all us mamas hopes of healing and heaven. All right.
Thank you.
Take care, Mamas.
All right. Bye.